Der Fußball ist zurück in der zweiten Liga.
Bravo, macht Tempo, wartet auf Harte. Zwanke kommt und jetzt ist es Klos. Also Arminia Bielefeld.
Penny, 2-0. 2-0 für den FC St. Pauli.
Diese
Flanke, Tor, nächster Treffer.
Ist heuer Fernandes mit vorne. Ja klar ist er mit vorne. Kittel mit der Ecke, Feuerball und da!
Guten Tag and welcome to another edition of the Zweite Bundesliga podcast. On today's edition, we'll be discussing all of the action from match day 24. It was like the wild, wild west in the Zweite Bundesliga. Teams in the bottom six were picking up points left, right and centre, and it seemed like no one wanted to win in the top half. The only two sides doing so were St. Pauli and Karlsruhe, and we'll get onto them shortly. To help us dive through all the carnage from match day 24 is, of course, our wonderful co-host, Eva Lotebola. Eva, good morning to you. Obviously, a very happy weekend in terms of footballing results. A far cry from previous weeks. But before we get through all of that stuff, how are you today?
I'm very well. I was told I have to do this specifically. Both of our German teams picked up points in games where we weren't expecting them to do so, and obviously we're at that stage. It's getting warmer. Some parts in Germany it's snowing, in some other parts it's not, but spring is coming. Yeah, and with that kind of the tendency that nobody wants to leave this league. Teams from the bottom are picking up points, teams from the top do not want to. Apparently nobody wants to leave this league. I mean, we love to keep you all in this league, but it's not how it works. And yeah, we're going to speak about a couple of teams where we probably thought they're out of the whole relegation battle, kind of, but they were sucked in again. Because, I mean, this is what we said in what we keep saying for the last 4 years, but we kept saying it this season again. It's not enough to have one good series of games. You have to have consistency. It's not enough if you maybe have a clear path going forward, and if it worked before, at some stage teams will figure that out and will play at the little weaknesses you have, and one moment where you're not completely there can cost you a game, can cost you a win. And that's why some teams who maybe thought towards winter we're out of that relegation battle are in it again. We're going to talk about them later, but obviously, as I said, first and foremost we're going to concentrate towards the upper half of the table.
Yes, we will. In group one we'll focus on the teams that are in the top three. Only one side managed to pick up points on the weekend, and it was not SV Darmstadt. They made the journey to Bielefeld hoping to inflict some pain after the previous meeting where Robin Huck scored a stoppage time equaliser to deny them 3 points at home. Bielefeld had a new manager in charge heading into the weekend. We had, well, after our podcast last week, we had no idea who was going to be taking charge. There were some interesting names, all of them of the football heritage variety, but none that you'd seriously want as your head coach. Uwe Koschinat was given the role. He had been at Saarbrücken earlier in the season, has experience at this level, and is a known fighter. He kept Sandhausen up a couple of seasons ago, and then it was, well, his following season didn't work out. So he's done it before. The question is, could he do it again? There are a couple of incidents in the first half. The big one was Filip Stojukovic's attempted hack of Sebastian Vasiliadis, and it left a lot to be desired. The action was very questionable, but one would say that the outcome is what gave Dr. Felix Brüch and the video assistant refereeing crew the decision not to give him a red card. There's a similar incident in the last game of this group where an action was similar but was given a straight red. Darmstadt probably had one of the better chances in the first half. Marvin Melem hit the post late on, but they were goalless into the break. Bielefeld had been the better team in the game, so it almost came as no surprise that they were the first team to concede. It seems they've done this quite often this year where they've had good performance and then they concede and it becomes really hard for them to get in. It was a bit of a long, lofty ball. Priedel makes a bit of a mistake and Honzak scores for his fourth goal of the calendar year. He said in the Zweite Bundesliga. So he's had really good form and been really important for them when they've had all the injuries. They've got players coming back and some of them made substitution appearances throughout. But Bielefeld, in most situations this season, would have probably lied down here, but not this time. They would get their equalising goal on 72 minutes, and the man who made the mistake was on the end of a Fabian Klaus header. It was Manuel Prietl scoring his first goal of the campaign. You certainly wouldn't have had him as your first goal scorer for Bielefeld on your bingo card. And you certainly wouldn't have had Benjamin Kanuric as the game-winning goal scorer in this game. The substitute finishing off was a nice pass from Brian Lassmer. Very nice pass. But the finish was a pile-driving rocket into the top right corner. And the Alm went absolutely ballistic. The atmosphere almost tearing the fabric of the stadium down. So that then the stadium somehow survived the third goal when Marcel Schuhen just completely lost his mind. He actually assisted the Fabian Klaus third goal. And that is your game. 3-1 is your final. Bielefeld move up to 15th with the victory. Darmstadt, two consecutive away defeats in a row. They look forward to their home game against Kaiserslautern on Saturday night. We'll talk about Bielefeld and I can touch on the Darmstadt stuff. There was a lot to like about the performance. We always talk about the new manager bounce and, you know, statistically speaking, it doesn't always pan out for particular teams. But there was something resolute about the way Bielefeld, something old schoolish mentality of we're going to work hard, chase down every ball, you know, be hard in the tackles. They seem to do a lot of the basics well. And I think on the balance of play, as a neutral, they were the better team. And I think they were very worthy of the 3 points.
And I think the thing is that the first half was okay, just to like kind of get into the game. At the feeling of the first like 10 to 15 minutes where both teams weren't really sure how this is going to go. Both teams had like needed some time to get in the game. You had a lot of mistakes in midfield from both sides. Darmstadt tried to break through as soon as they could, like with long balls from the left or right side. And then obviously that one chance you mentioned, I think it was Honzak in the end, who hits the woodwork. You had Bielefeld before with Hack with brilliant work on the goal line, where you normally would say this is going to be maximum a corner, but he breaks through and then with a bit of luck the ball ends in front of Vassiliadis, and I'm still not sure if he tried to score a goal or like get the ball to Fabian Klose. The end post didn't work. What Thorsten Lieberknecht said after this game was what you just spoke about the like tackles and duels, that they had problems with that in the game against Heidenheim as well, that physically they do not seem to be up for the task 100%, that they gave balls away too quickly, that they gave away possession too quickly. And you could really see that in the second half, that in the first half you had possession clearly at Darmstadt, and that changed in the second half. The possession leaned toward Bielefeld and Darmstadt had problems using that for their advantage. Obviously you had that first goal where Priedl and Ramos can't decide. This was already when Bielefeld changed to three in the back, where you had Priedl as kind of the third player in the middle, which did definitely help Christian Gebauer, because he is not a right defender. We kept saying this, it's not. But obviously, Uwe Koschina did not have so many other players to put there with Klünter and Bendel both out. So this was one of the only things he could do. And I thought that Gebauer did it very well after he was put in a more offensive position, because you can clearly see this is more where he likes to play. And then you had Vassiliadis in that midfield, later Kanubic, which was actually quite interesting because Uwe Koshina was asked whether he put Kanubic on with the intent of him being more offensive player, and he was like, yeah, no, not at all, because we already had Konsbruch, and he was more there to stabilize midfield. And I have to say, I do like that, because his communication in general seems very honest, very clear. Even after the game, he said, well, we needed that, the stadium needed that, but we have to show them that we're up for the task on Friday night, especially because, and we're going to talk about that later, other teams picked up points. Like, we're obviously, first and foremost, we have to look at ourselves, but we can't afford not to kind of take a look left and right as well. And like, you could see after the goal for Darmstadt, there was this 5 minutes of insecurity that you could see in the contract game as well, where you nearly have the 2-0 afterwards through Stojakovic, but Freisel goes out, kind of forces Stojakovic to take the shot a bit earlier than he probably wanted to. And then you have two players who can clear the ball, Prichl clears it in the end. And after that, they found back in the game. You had the Hack shot from a distance, Klos misses after Geber, of course. And then you had, which is good for the team as well, that they finally score after set pieces, obviously, as well. The 1-1 was highly deserved, in my opinion. And then what you had in this game is that the substitutes worked very well. Before the 2-1, Corbenu already has this chance where the header, where it don't get, why Schuh just doesn't. I don't know about you, but I have the feeling he could have held on to the ball. Maybe he was surprised, but Darmstadt just can't clear the ball. There are like three or four contacts after that. I think first it's Kanuric, then it's Lassmann, then it's Kanuric again, who then scores. Like, there are plenty of moments there where Darmstadt could have cleared the ball and don't. And I really like that Bielefeld kept putting pressure on Darmstadt. And you kind of had the feeling after the 2-1, they're not going to back down now. And I mean, it's quite funny because last week we had this. It's the first time this season after Bielefeld took the lead, they were not winning. And this is the first time they came from behind and they won. And against Darmstadt, so that was pretty good. And obviously, Klos scored in his 408th game for Bielefeld. He tied the record with Wolfgang Kneipp, which is, amazing. I think it's 167th goal for Bielefeld, or something like that. So, good result. But, the Nuremberg game is where the whole focus is now. But I had the feeling it was deserved because they actually had a plan going forward, and various plans, not only long balls into the box, but actually work over the sides, work with Ochipka and Hack together on the left side. You had Gebo and Lasma on the right side then. Once again, three in the back seems to be something where Bielefeld can build up more danger throughout the game.
Yeah, I think tactically, those changes in personnel and switching, the structure really aided Bielefeld in gaining a bit of control. And I think the thing that we were looking for is when they conceded the opener, the response, and it took time, but once they sort of settled themselves, they really built the foundations of getting back into the game. They got the goal, and there was an inkling, and I think it might have been felt in the stadium as well, that we could win this game, because Darmstadt were reeling. They offered next to nothing in the final 20 minutes, and I reckon the last few weeks they've done this where they've just kind of settled for, we'll take the point, it's okay. And it happened in Heidenheim the week before. They got burnt with an 89th minute goal from Jan Nicholas Bester, 90+1 Kanuric goal. I mean, They more than anyone need the break. I mean, like, they have a winnable game against the Kaiserslautern team that has one win in the last five on the weekend at home. A game they probably should win. But I don't know. I don't know if they will. They've looked a bit shaky. That's a World Feed game, by the way. That's the Saturday night kickoff. Bielefeld, of course, at home against Nuremberg on Friday night. It will all be another important six-pointer. So, if not Darmstadt, who? Hamburger SV? Nay. They went to Karlsruhe on Sunday knowing a win would put them top by a cup, by a point. Karlsruhe, on the other hand, well, they're four games in a row with victory. They were hoping to make it five. The one thing that we knew could be a bit of a challenge was the fact that Hamburg did not have Sebastian Schonlau, the club captain, and the main figurehead of that defensive four. What we couldn't expect was an absolute defensive calamity by Hamburg. And if they weren't trying to give the goals, you would have thought the game might have been fixed. It was so poor, but it wasn't, obviously. It all started 10 minutes into the game. A Hamburg mistake. Mikael Kaufmann heading the ball on Paul Niebel, who scored in his second consecutive game. Niebel has been really good in that midfield four. And then 7 minutes later, it was 2-0. Kaufmann, again, with his seventh assist of the season. He finds Leon Jensen, who has a very easy tap-in. 32 minutes in, it was 3. Marvin Muheim with an excellent assist. Miro Muheim with an excellent assist to Paul Niebel, which catches Hoyer Fernandez in no man's land and Schleusner with the easiest finish of his season. 3-0 at the break. And during this period, Jonas David, Noah Cutterback were subbed off for William Mikael Brensis and Javi Montero. Surprised Muheim survived the yanking. He was awful. And he proceeded to be awful in this game. However, 3-0 leads are not safe in the Spider Bundesliga. We said this last week. We've said it many weeks where 3-0 leads are just not safe anymore. Who knew? So 5 minutes into the second half, Robert Glatzel scores. Goal 15 for him. Game progresses. Now, Karlsruhe were just all over Hamburg at the time. Then Glatzel scores again. Muheim with the assist. 3-2. And the immediate panic of, no, please, not again. Hamburg are not going to do this again. But Karlsruhe were saved when Javi Montero fouls Fabian Schleusner. You could argue it probably could have been a straight red, but he'd already been booked, and he was ready to be booked. But the question is, who could you have put on in that situation? I don't know. They didn't know. Montero gets sent off. 2 minutes later, Schleusner round to Fernandez. 4-2. That's your game. 5 wins in a row for Karlsruhe. They are 8th, and have had an unbelievable turnaround. Whereas Hamburg absolutely missed the boat of what was a golden opportunity to take top honours. This game said a lot about how much Hamburg are reliant on Sebastian Schonlau than it did about Karlsruhe, who were absolutely on it. It is the first time, I think, in 10 years that Karlsruhe have beaten Hamburg in all competitions. And there were lots of celebrations in the stadium, I was told. What a missed opportunity for Hamburg. There were some interesting comments made by Tim Walter post-match that left a lot to be desired. Very fighting words from a guy who arguably could have seen his team given up 6 or 7. We've seen some bad performances. Hamburg's performance in the first half of their last away game in Heidenheim, but this was at another level. It was the worst of the worst, and it leaves for some very interesting decision-making heading into their home game against Holstein Kiel before the break.
Yeah, I would fully agree. And I mean, the thing is that we weren't sure about Hamburg in the last couple of weeks. If you think back to the Bielefeld game, if Bielefeld would have been better, they probably could have gotten points here as well. And they were kind of, you had the feeling that they were getting away with it, that they were getting away with not being at 100%, with making mistakes. But, like, mistakes can happen. That's completely fine, especially it's not that, because especially that weekend, because Darmstadt lost as well, Heidenheim only got a point. It didn't hurt that much. At the same time, you would argue you want to pick up points if the other teams obviously don't. But the way they lost this game, like they, how they completely stopped playing football after the 3-2, where, I mean, they were lucky that it wasn't already 4-1 or even like 5 or 6-1 at that stage. I mean, Karlsruhe could have been up 5-0 at halftime. They had so many chances, and half of them, because Hamburg in defense was so irritated by Nebel, Vanicek, and Schleusener. They were tremendous in this game. Like, and this is, I think this is why we always keep expecting a bit more of Karlsruhe, because the squad in general has some very good individual players, but they weren't really showing it. They were showing it in this game, what they can do when they put pressure on a defense very early on, especially on a defense which, had problems all over. And they, Hamburg, in my opinion, had pretty much deficits in physical duels as well in this game. And they couldn't really, like, obviously, probably have to discuss Mikkel Kaufmann a bit as well, because I think half of his tackles, duels are on the lines of being a foul. And he goes down, like, his opponents do not go as down as easy as he does. I think that is at least fair to say. He goes down very easily. But like, they, Hamburg just didn't get any sort of calmness into their game. Walter made the chances before halftime, then he made the chances afterwards. I mean, Königsdorfer and Nimmt had some impact, but I had the feeling after the 3-2, they were just too confident that this is going to end 3-3, because they managed to do it against Heidenheim. And you can never do that. No games will be the same. No two games will be the same. And I was very naive, obviously. Montero, he looked like that from the get-go when he got on, that he's not going to finish this game either way. And yeah, in the end, it's a highly deserved defeat for Hamburg. It was a very good performance by Karlsruhe. They really show once again what it can mean if you pick up some sort of self-confidence, if you manage to get yourself out there. And then if we circle back to what Tim Walter said, and this is, we know that Tim Walter is not one for diplomatic statements, but obviously, because, I mean, I understand that Hamburg fans are tired of hearing this, because like, this keeps happening over and over again, where sure, this year they're gonna go up, they show very good football, they show a good, you're a good team, good individual players. And then there's always this time where you wonder, okay, what's going on here? And obviously the jokes are starting. But as a head coach with that experience, who was head coach last year where this happened, to say to all the people who say forever Zweite Liga has foul, they don't know we're going to play Bundesliga next season, it's a very bold statement after this, after that game. They're still in the top three. This is obviously, you cannot discuss that, but this does not send the right message. You can't say we're gonna get up anyway. We can lose like three games. We can play bad football. We're gonna like screw the people who say forever it's Zweite Liga has fault. Excuse me, but you cannot, if you want to get promoted, obviously you're allowed to have games where you're not coming out on top. That's completely fine. You're allowed games where you win, although you're not the better team. All that is fine. But you do not say stuff like that after a game like that. That's punch in the face for all the fans that traveled there, because, and all the fans in general, because they've seen this before. They've seen this the past years. And I don't think, for me personally, that's the right way to handle the situation right now. I don't think it helps. It's okay to give the players confidence, but that's not confidence. That's a bold and problematic statement that doesn't help you right now because you just lost. It's okay. If they would have won that 4-3 after that first half, all good. You can say that, but they lost because they were bad.
Yeah. I mean, it reminds me of a documentary I was watching during the week about the Bullies of Baltimore. This is for the NFL fans. If you don't want to, you can skip ahead. And they beat the Tennessee Titans in a game, and Coach Brian Billick said, had a cover of Sports Illustrated, which said that the Titans were the best team in the NFL. Baltimore went in and beat Tennessee. And he went along the lines of they're the best team in the NFL, but not today. And of course, the next time they met, which was in the playoffs, that was plastered all over the big screens, and the Titans got G'd up. But Baltimore ended up winning the game. And honestly, great documentary to watch for NFL fans. But the point I'm trying to make is that these kinds of lines, this is gold for media, because the media doesn't forget these things. And teams that are who treat hamburgers like a cup final, they know these things. Or he thinks they're going to the Bundesliga. Oh. Why we don't need any more motivation to travel to Hamburg if you're Holstein Kiel, because we've already beaten them there before. We don't need the motivation, but they think they're a Bundesliga team. Great. We're gonna show them that they're not. And teams get really G'd up for that. So he'll want his team to back that up. Because if they don't, ooh, hello. Hello, media. We'll give some more love to Karlsruhe, though, because Hamburg were awful. Mm-hmm. Paul Niebel was great, though. I thought he was fantastic as well. Actually, to be fair, it's hard to say anyone played bad for Karlsruhe. They were brilliant. It was a great team performance. They were obviously dynamic in the front third. Niebel's on loan from Mainz, and I know there was some Mainz people who were like, ooh, this kid's good. He's very good. If he can be as consistent as he's been over the last few match days, he could play for Mainz next season. No questions about it. We should make a move to Düsseldorf. Fortuna Düsseldorf hosted Heidenheim. So, heading into this game, Heidenheim had the opportunity to close the gap further. They did, but just by a point. They opened the scoring 20 minutes in. Florian Pick, patient, plays the ball in. And I have no idea how the league's top goal scorer heading into this match day was left completely alone at the back post. Like, he's pretty big, lanky, looks like a goal scorer. He scored 15 times this year. How can you let him get goal side and at the back post on his own? Anyway, 16 for the campaign. Him and Glatzel are now tied. But Fortuna Düsseldorf did respond. 7 minutes later, Mikhail Karbovnik finding Emmanuel Joa. It seemed a little too easy how they dissected it. It was a great play by Karbovnik. Good finish from Joa. His second of the campaign. The big scene, though, happened towards the end of the game. 77 minutes in. A pretty regulation header back from Hoffman. And then he was chopped down. He was chopped down like a tree. By Dennis Tomala. And Tomala seemed absolutely surprised that he was given a straight red card by referee Daniel Schlager. There's no bones about it. It was absolutely a straight red card. Not only could you be dumb enough to make a decision like that, but right in front of the referee. Come on, Dennis. Right in front of the referee. Of course it's going to be a red card. And if it was anything other than a red card, there would have been an absolute riot. Anyway, Düsseldorf pressed looking for the game-winning goal, but they were a minute late and a dollar short. Game ends 1-1. Düsseldorf missed the opportunity to get into fourth place. Heidenheim, the gap is now 1 point for automatic qualification, but they could have easily been equal top. This game was tight. It was very defensive. Both teams not really giving an inch. We did see Fortuna where their Sonder Trojkert, the 95 euro Sonder Troy kit, templated Sonder Troy kit with the big F, which, like, it's a nice, it looks nice on the pitch, but I wouldn't pay 95 euros for it. Just saying.
I thought it looks like another character from Super Mario.
Yeah, he's Super Mario when he can shoot the flames. He can shoot the fireball. Yeah, good call. I'll give you that one. But yeah, we'll talk about the game. So Kleindienst scores his first goal since match day 21. That was when he scored 4 against Nürnberg and cost Marcus Weinsil his job. Nürnberg fans are like, yeah, good job, Tim. Well done. But yeah, it was a tight defensive game. Goalkeepers played big part in this one in keeping it at 1-1. But I, in my opinion, I feel Fortuna will feel a little bit more aggrieved. They created a little bit more, and they just didn't have the final pass, that just that individual quality towards the end of the game to get them the result.
Yeah, and you could see after the game, like, the players, like Ginczek and stuff, reacted that they felt that this is the end for their hopes. Mm. And I mean, in a way, it is, because there was no better weekend than winning than this, because Paderborn only drew, Kaiserslautern only drew, Heidenheim would have lost, obviously, and Darmstadt and HSV drew. So if there would have been a perfect match day, it would have been that. And I mean, the thing is, it's so unnecessary to get behind in this game. It was a very typical Heidenheim just wants what they can do, and that's it. Like, this was the first time they put pressure on Düsseldorf at all in this game, and they immediately scored. Mm. And they weren't good. Like, Heidenheim wasn't good in this game, in my opinion. Like, it was a typical Heidenheim away game. It kind of, like, they do what they have to do. And there was this one huge scene for Heidenheim in the second half with Kastenmeier mistake, and then in the end Hoffmann who's forced to pull the foul. But yeah, the rest, it was Düsseldorf, like Tanaka, obviously, Ruven Hennings, and that was all when they were already, like, behind. So they showed some good effort, and this is where this is the games you have to win for like staying on to that last chance, and they didn't. Then you could see Tijun, I think Hendricks had that one shot which goes, like, would have been a field goal probably. I don't know much about football, but it looked like it. And you can see that Daniel Tijun is just, like, so angry. He's so annoyed. And understandably so, because obviously it's, like, you were one player more on the pitch. Heidenheim was one man down. You could have played that way better, but it was just too hectic, everything they did. And it was, obviously, there was a different outcome from them. But if you look back at the Magdeburg game at the very start of 2023, where they had tons of chances until they finally got the goal. With Düsseldorf, I sometimes have the problem that it's not that they don't create chances, but they don't think them through. Hmm. Like, for the quality this team has, what comes out of it, it's not enough. And that's why in the end, they have to be okay with the 1-1 for Heidenheim. Obviously, it's a good result with one man down, and obviously because they were the only team who picked up at least 1 point in the top three, they can live with that. But yeah, I mean, for Düsseldorf, for me, that was it, and you could kind of see that in the players' reaction afterwards.
Yeah, they're done. I would make a case that the top three is as it is, but it's just how they finish is going to be fascinating. I don't know how it's going to end, but who knows? But yeah, no, they've missed the boat. They had to win, and it would have been 4 wins in their last 5. It would have put them within, doing quick maths, 4 points of Heidenheim. They would leapfrog Paderborn, and they would have been within a chance of getting in the mix, assuming they could keep the performance up. There'll be changes throughout the off season. There are definitely key areas that they need to fix. Excuse me. But yeah, it's definitely a lost season. And I think if, you know, we felt really, we rate Daniel Thun highly. He's a very good manager. But the excuses will disappear next season. It'll be a year where they will be expected to go up. So yeah, will be fascinating. They're at Rostock on Sunday. Heidenheim, they will be looking to break Karlsruhe's 5-game winning streak on Friday night. Let's take our first break, and on the other side, we'll get to our Group 2 games, and we're going to start at the Millen Tor when St. Pauli hosted Greuther Fürth. Could they make it 7? St. Pauli have been a perfect 6 from 6. Heading into match day 24, they were hoping to make it 7 when they hosted Greuther Fürth on Saturday afternoon. But the visitors, who were looking to get back to winning ways, well, they were ready to ruin the party immediately. Because 6 minutes in, Ragnar Ake opened the scoring. St. Pauli really not dealing with any sort of the danger at all, and Ake was eventually the recipient of the opening goal. It was almost an Ake in the butt for St. Pauli when he made it 2 on 9 minutes. Simon Aster, who returned after his red card suspension in the last away fixture, played an excellent ball to Ake, who snuck it past Nikolai Vasil. But no bueno. Offside was the decision, and it was a tight one. And a big one, because moments later, St. Pauli would work their magic and get the equaliser. Lucas Daschner finding Jackson Irvine. Irvine making the right pass to Minolas Saliakas. And Saliakas' first time effort, squeezing through the legs of Haddadi, past Andy Linder, and into the back of the net. The big scene was just on the edge of half time. Gideon Jung making too much out of so little. Instead of playing the simple ball, he tried to do a little bit too much. As he was dispossessed, he took down Lucas Daschner. As he was the last man, Felix Weyer, the referee, had no choice but to give Jung a straight red card. The challenge might not have seemed malicious at all, but being the last man, Zweier had no choice, and this was ticked off as a correct decision. The game would then be for St. Pauli to win, and win they would. On 55 minutes, they would get their game-winning goal. In a ball that really should have been dealt with by a Greuther Fürth defenders, the ball was allowed to drop to Oladapo Afolayan. And Afolayan with an excellent volley to put the ball past Linda, and that was your game. 2-1 the final, 7 wins in a row for St. Pauli. They are now 1 point behind Düsseldorf, and they are 2 points behind Paderborn for fourth place. An extraordinary run of form continues for St. Pauli, but it wasn't without their hiccups, because even with the advantage, they fell into the same sort of traps as they had previously, which was when teams start to press them and they try and play out from the back. They are vulnerable. Fürth were able to get some chances, but they weren't able to finish any of them off. So seventh heaven for St. Pauli. They're just doing the basics. They're keeping it simple. They're making things happen. And how fun is winning? Isn't winning great? Because when you consider heading into the break, they were in all sorts of shambolic. They are now 7 wins in a row. And Sandhausen on the weekend, they could make it 8.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that they just have some self-understanding of, now we're not going to lose. Like, I mean, there was the moment where it could have been 2-0 for Fürth. And then I would question how St. Pauli would have recovered from that. But they just didn't back down. And, like, that, especially Afolayan, them is, and Zaliakas, both of them, they were great once again in this game. What was a bit surprising for me is that St. Pauli couldn't really replicate that sort of dominance they had before when they were in lead. That they let Fürth come back into this game, although Fürth was one man down. And I think it's okay to give your opponents room, but it could have gone wrong as well, because in my opinion, St. Pauli gave them a bit too much room. But for Fürth, I mean, Haddadi and Michalski were very vital parts of that Fürth defense in the past couple of months. Michalski was mainly in focus due to his goal scoring. Haddadi is a very strong addition to that team as well. Made the one or a couple of strikers very frustrated up front. But they both didn't really look good in that game. You have that 1-1 where Haddadi irritates Linda. And then I have no idea what Michalski does for the second goal. Like, I watched that scene. I looked at it from different angles. And I don't know if he thinks Haddadi's header is going to go in a different direction. And that's why he doesn't really act on it. But I think it's pretty clear that what he does is not enough, to say the least. And then we kind of have to talk about this, that we've seen this before with Fürth, that they haven't played bad, but they weren't, like, they didn't manage to pick up points. And this was, and I'm sorry to say that, the pre-Alexander Zorniger era as well, where we've seen that. They're not necessarily the worst team, but due to individual mistakes, it cost them the game. And that's why, Michael Fischer, who was on here as well a couple of months ago, and he said in their new podcast that Fürth has to accept that they're back in the relegation battle. I mean, at this stage, when we went kind of into winter break, if you looked at both relegated teams on the Bundesliga, Fürth and Bielefeld, you were thinking, oh, much, like, huge difference where they're coming from. Now they're 3 points apart. And you have to look at that in... They're 3 points apart, although Bielefeld has only won twice in 2023. So that's, I think, and that's the biggest problem, that Fürth is just picking up two less wins. Like, I mean, they have 6 wins this season so far, equal to Regensburg, and only Braunschweig and Sandhausen have less. That's not good. That's not ideal. And they draw too much. I'm sorry, someone was at the door and I was very retarded. people don't shame me. That's like, that's what they have to do against Magdeburg. I think there are no two opinions about that. If they, like, they have to accept their wreck in there, and they play Magdeburg and Sandhausen. And 2 out of those 3 next games, they have to win this. Otherwise, they pull themselves into, and this is the team I was talking about at the beginning. They look like they're confident. They look like they have a plan, that Sony Football works, that we kept saying what can happen, like, if we have more than... Like, what does happen in the winter break when Zorniger has more time? I mean, what happened is that Ragnar Ache is amazing under him, but obviously that's not enough. And the problems defensively still stand, apparently. And they want to hope that they can get all 3 points against Magdeburg and Sandhausen at least. You can draw against Paderborn or even lose to them. But with two, they need... at least need to get out with, I would say, 4 to 5 points out of those next 3 games. That's the bare minimum.
Yeah, totally agree. you know, only 4 points above Regensburg in that playoff spot. And yeah, I mean, this game could have easily gone their way had the Ake goal stood, the second one 2-0. You know, then they've got the competitive advantage. The game states in their favour, and you would suggest that, you know, they were in a really good position to go and win the game. They did. Then they essentially committed the cardinal sin, which was they didn't really refocus. They gave up a really easy first goal and just some really poor communication. You could see how annoyed Linda was with the second one, where, you know, Linda wasn't really going to get there, so he stays stationed. But where the Furt guys just, like, the ball lands right in the middle of the two Furt defenders and Afellayan, who was so confident to take it with the first time. Like, just horrid. So, yeah, they're going to have to pick it up. It's the second consecutive away game they've finished with 10 men as well. Both guys losing both of them in the first half. Yeah, interesting. St. Pauli have away at Sandhausen on Sunday. As Eva mentioned, Furt host Magdeburg. That is a Saturday afternoon game. Let's move to Furt's neighbours, Nürnberg. They returned home after being beaten by Hamburg the week before. They took on Eintracht Braunschweig, who had that draw the weekend before. Big game for both sides. This was a six-pointer because Braunschweig knew that on Friday, with a win, put the pressure on the teams around them to try and get a result. Did not happen. First half was really a game of near misses. Quadwadua had the best opportunity, but his curling effort curled away from the goal mouth, and it was goalless at the break. They would get their breakthrough, Nürnberg, who were, for the most part, the better side. Free kick from Taylan Duman, finding Florian Hübner to give Nürnberg a one-goal lead. And then one of the goals of the match day, and this is not because it was a banger from outside the box, but this was just some really good perseverance, but also some really shoddy defending. Jan Zimmer picks the ball up at halfway, virtually untouched, to the 18-yard box, where he lets fly. And I think Jasmin Fejcic is expecting one of his defenders to make a play on the ball, you know, be it Kurike or Di Medina. No play at the ball. And Jimura scores his first goal of the season. And that is your final. 2-0 is the score. Nürnberg have won 3 of their last 5 games. Doesn't feel like they have, but they have. They are no longer the worst scoring team in the division. And they are 12th. 5 points clear of the relegation playoff spot as they prepare for their away game in Bielefeld. Braunschweig have lost 4 of their last 5. They have the biggest game of the match day for them, the Lower Saxony Derby against Hanover. Oh, baby, what a game that is going to be. Or maybe not, because both sides in that tilt are playing some really poxy football. We'll talk about Nürnberg because, you know, the bigger of the two clubs in this situation, one that has a bit more individual quality. We were interested to see if Vince Seimel would score against the club that he's on loan, against the club that is loaning him out. He didn't. But they just found a way, Nürnberg, in the end. I think on the balance of play, they just provided a little bit more. And by a little, I mean a lot more. And yeah, slowly but surely, it's not the prettiest football, and nor does it have to be, but they're starting to move away from the bottom three. And again, here, I think in the two home games they've had under Hecking, they've certainly earned those 6 points.
Yeah, and I think it was the right direction, the right reaction. Sorry, after the Hamburg game. And I mean, they were the better team. I really like Duman in this game. He's always kind of a question mark for me. It was obvious that he was especially dangerous through set pieces, that he was the guy to take them, and a lot of them were dangerous. I mean, there was Tempelman after his set piece as well, Hübner in the first half. So you had chances through that. And at the moment, I mean, if you obviously you just mentioned how good the second goal was, but if in general as a team right now you have problems scoring goals, this is what we always say: using set pieces is a rather easier way doing that. And yeah, they did that, scored the first goal, and then obviously you can really feel something breaking up from inside in this game. Yeah, and I mean, you have to say that Fasic, in my opinion, was the best Braunschweig player on the pitch. He kept Braunschweig in the game equally. Vindal kept Nürnberg in the game when needed. But yeah, it was just less for Braunschweig. You can't really put the focus on their defense, because yeah, Kurucay was good, Fasic was good. Wouldn't really say that it was their fault, but the rest of the team didn't really do much. Like, you had the one scene with Moldhaup and Lauberbach where Vindal is surprised, but they had like this 5 minutes of good football when the second half started, and they didn't get anything out of that, and then Nürnberg completely took over. Yeah, I would fully agree, deserved win for Nürnberg, big 3 points for them, and that game against Bielefeld is going to be huge on Friday night.
100%. Another 6-pointer, another opportunity. Obviously getting a clean sheet was big for them as well. Scoring two goals in a game was a big accomplishment for this particular group. And yeah, look, they will feel very up and about the opportunity. A difficult opportunity it will be. I think they're expecting for the Friday night game over 20,000, maybe even more. I mean, so that's going to...
It's difficult to say how many tickets Nürnberg has sold, but their standing area is sold out, and Bielefeld, like, it looks a bit more. I think from at least Monday to today, they sold over 2,000 tickets, I would assume, yeah.
Nice. Big trip to make on a Friday. So, yeah. Look forward to that.
Once again, Bielefeld had to travel to Nürnberg on a Friday night and to Fürth. Nürnberg has to travel on a Friday night to Bielefeld. It's a joke. It's a complete joke, and I don't understand why.
This is true. Speaking of games that geologically make a lot of sense on a Friday night would be Kaiserslautern and Sandhausen. Not a particularly far trip for Sandhausen fans, who, by the way, I just want to, before I actually get into it, they are constant... I don't like the fact that Sandhausen fans who travel to games are constantly mocked because their away section is small. There's not a big contingent. They deserve all the love. They actually turn up. They support their team. They make noise. They get around it when things are, you know, when good things are happening. I think the hate towards it is shit. It's shit. You know, because it takes dedication to go to every single away game, you know, when you're not a particularly big city, not a big team, you know. So kudos to the Sandhausen fans that made the journey to Kaiserslautern on the Friday night to see a good fight from them. A few things didn't go their way during the game, but one thing that went their way was an Ahmet Kutucu goal. And on 8 minutes... boy, did he produce some individual brilliance. He nifted past Hendrik Zuk, penetrated the goal, got past another Kaiserslautern defender, and then put the ball past Advo Spahic. Spahic was in for the ill Andy Luther. They had a bunch of players who were out sick in this game. Then the biggest controversy of this game took place. Now, Patrick Drivers probably should have done a little bit better with his punch. And clear. It went straight to Boris Tomiyaku, took it first time. Ball goes in. However, Philip Hersher, in my opinion, and, you know, my opinion is probably not worth a lot these days, or at all in general, He looks like he's clearly blocking the line of sight of Patrick Drouves, which wouldn't be an issue, except he was offside. Which, by definition, and the way that we've seen the rules enacted this season, would mean that a goal would be chalked off. But after, I think it was like 6 or 7 minutes of looking at it, referee Max Border and his the video assistant refereeing crew decided it was a goal. Incredible. It was an incredible decision because he was offside. And he was essentially enacting the goalkeeper, and he was also enacting a defender whilst being offside. And madhouse. Anyway, second half goes on and Kaiserslautern got a penalty. Hamidi Alkadoui handling the ball after a set piece. Kevin Kraus takes the penalty, scores his fourth of the year, 2-1. And I remember the World Feed commentator saying that they're on their way to fourth place. Kaiserslautern are on their way to fourth place. Someone forgot to tell Frank Evina this, because once again, he helped Sandhausen secure a point. Kaiserslautern completely fell asleep at the back. It was really poorly defended, and Evina makes it 2-2. He scores, and Sandhausen get a point. Now, obviously didn't help that one of the teams we're going to talk about next took 3 points, but a pretty important point, whereas Kaiserslautern now, well, they have only won once in their last five. They slipped down to sixth, and it seems like the good times might be over for them. They've got Darmstadt on Saturday night. That is a World Feed game. I kind of feel bad. Like, I don't know really what to say about this game because there was a lot of things were happening. Again, this was classic Thomas Orell football where he shut it down, essentially. There wasn't going to be a lot of room for attacking football, entertaining football, nice football, pleasing football. It was all about, well, we don't want you to score at all or do anything, so we're not going to do anything as well. And the two goals they conceded were, well, one was shouldn't have been a goal in the first place. The other one, a bit unlucky. But yeah, I don't know. Despite the score being 2-2, it kind of feels like a fair result. It almost 0-0 almost felt like a fair result in this game because, you know, the quality of attacks were pretty low from both sides.
Yeah, and I mean, it looked like Sandhausen was up for the task first. Like, I mean, they let Kaiserslautern come over the left side, but you could see that what Kaiserslautern has problems with, that their attempts on target are not really dangerous or not on target enough, however you want to put it. They try to increase the pressure. Then there was the discussion, obviously, if there should have been a penalty with Kraus versus Eswein. I think in the end, the right decision, could have understood if it was given a penalty at the same time, because Kraus takes the risk. And then obviously, if you're bottom of the table, you can't get the ball out, it's always going to be difficult. And yeah, but I would agree, like, it's offside. That goal should have never been there in the first place. Like, if that's not active offside, I don't know what is. Because as you've mentioned, Matthew, he bounced two players, one of them being the goalkeeper. Because you can see that Drouves is obviously going to that direction because he expects Herrschak, like, getting the ball. You have the Sandhausen defender thinking the same. So how is that not offside? Like, I do not get it. In my opinion, it should have been. And I can understand that Sandhausen is not happy with that decision. If it takes 6 minutes to decide whether it's active or passive, like, I just don't have words for that. And Yeah, obviously for Kaiserslautern, they needed a penalty to take the lead. I mean, we were discussing this off air. We've seen a penalty last night in the Manchester City Leipzig game, where you can see some parallels. I think the difference is here that Guendouzi has a clearer view on the ball, but yeah, still, it's always difficult. Matthias Sammer was acting out how players jump to get the ball. It's quite funny. And I mean, you can't say, yeah, if you don't want to play a handball, don't get up to the aerial duel and just let your opponent score. That's not how football works. I think it's always like, listen, handballs like this, they're always difficult to decide on because where do you stop saying this is a natural movement of the hand in that height? It's always very difficult. Because obviously there is another person involved that you don't want to get the ball. I mean, there have been handballs like that that are dead obvious, like where the hand you can jump, but you can't jump like this. I think that's pretty clear. Yeah, and I mean we're back to where do we draw the line of intention? Where do we draw the line of what should be a penalty, what shouldn't, especially with the handball rule. And yeah, I think it's not helping. And I mean, I don't know what the referees, kind of communication was after this game, but I mean, last night, the referee basically said, I didn't see it on the pitch, didn't see it on the screen. I was told it was a penalty, so I gave it. And this is a state where we had in international football, that the referee on the pitch, who is the first referee who has to make the call in the end, listens to a VAR and he goes out, looks at the screen, doesn't see it. And then, how can you say what I saw on the pitch? Like, where do we draw the line with a clear mistake and stuff? Like, he was called out to look at it. He looked at it, doesn't see the handball, gives it. I mean, we're speaking about refereeing on an international, in the highest international league of European football. And this is where the level is at. And then you look down in Zweite Liga, where we have less pictures available, and you say, well, do we have the techniques? Do we have the equipment to really decide that? So yeah, I do understand that the 1,000 fans weren't happy, but my bigger problem is still with the 1-0 active passive is something that is most of the time it's very difficult to decide. In that opinion, I do not think it is, because yeah, it's not a he might have, like, I don't know, actively bound a player, but you can see that, you can see that with eyes that the players make movement towards him. So yeah, well, obviously good to see Arkoroci being back on the score sheet as a assist giver with a set piece. So that's good. And yeah, I do think in the end the result is deserved for Sandhausen, although they scored with their two shots on target. But I mean, in the end, the effort is what counted in that game, and that was a good effort by Sandhausen.
Yeah, totally agree. They were quite astute defensively. I know that Kaiserslautern had five shots on goal, on target, sorry, in this game. But yeah, I don't know how to feel about it because, yeah, I thought Sandhausen, they were gritty without being obviously superb. It was Tomáš Oral football. That's what it was. Sandhausen, St. Pauli, and as mentioned, Kaiserslautern have got Darmstadt away. And that's the world feed. Let's take our final break. And on the other side, we're going to talk about our group three games. And we're going to start at the Holstein Stadion when Holstein Kiel hosted Jahn Regensburg. Jahn Regensburg. Well, a team that had only accumulated one single point in the 2023 portion of the season. They were in desperate need of getting something done. They went to Kiel, hoping that they would find that spark. Kiel, of course, have been, well, the most frustrating team in the Zweite Bundesliga. A team that could easily be in fourth place, but also a team that could be in 13th. They once again dominated this game. Once again. Honestly, at this point, you could just repeat what we say about Kiel from every other match day, because the feeling is very much mutual. So they gave up the first goal, of course, after being in control. No one really closed down Benedikt Salah, who made a penetrating run. His ball found Kaan Kalliskana. His effort probably should have been saved by Robin Himmelmann, but the ball trickles in and 1-0. But you wouldn't think Gyan would concede a goal in stoppage time of the first half. No, that would never happen. Except it did. Because 4 minutes into stoppage time, Holstein Kiel would get their equaliser. And a familiar name got that equaliser. Remember Steven Skripski, when he scored all those goals early in the season? Well, he opened his 2023 account after Philip Zander's ball kind of was horribly defended by Jan. Skripski pouncing and putting the ball past Jonas Urbig. As the game progressed, it certainly felt like Kiel were going to find that winning goal. But as is so often the case, when you don't take your chances, you are made to be punished. And punished they were. Leon Guevara's ball into the box to Prince Ose Owusu. Simon Lorenz just not strong enough. And the too big, too strong, too good Prince Owusu managed to muscle his way through and score past Himmelmann and give Jan Regensburg their first win of 2023 and their first win since match day 13 when they defeated Sandhausen. Let's discuss. What the hell, Kiel? We need it. There it needs to be an intervention as to what is going on with this football club. There's fans wanting, we want Marcel Rapp out. As if, like, have you seen what is available right now? It is not exactly high quality talent. And if you ask any Arminia Bielefeld fan, they will recommend you the likes of Uli Fort, Daniel Schoening, Frank Kramer. Really, managers that you don't want at your football club. Marcel Rapp is fine. He just doesn't have the tools. He doesn't have the players to implement everything correctly. Because this team is good enough. The game plan is good enough. But my goodness, can they finish their dinner? This was another lost opportunity. And now they travel to Hamburg for a World Feed game. And just, yeah, honestly, what the hell? What the hell is going on?
I love, like, with Kiel, they have 8 wins, 9 draws, 7 defeats. And then they have 41 to 40 goals. And this is, like, mediocre. Mm. And this is what we keep saying. It's not bad to be mediocre in the Zweite Liga.
It's fine.
Like, you're 10 points away from Regensburg. That's fine. Okay, could have been 13. Fine. But, like, what did they expect? To be honest, what did they expect out of the season? In a way, I think Grapp tries to play, and I'm very sorry I'm going to say that now, like a Baumgarty football where a lot happens up front and in the back. The problem is that Kiel just doesn't score enough goals for what happens up front. Mm. You have to say at some stage they have to learn from their mistakes, and especially Regensburg offered them a lot. Like 62nd, 17th minute, they should have been up with one or two goals. I think that's clear. But I mean, in a way, we all saw it coming, and that's not good for Kiel. But I don't think changing the manager now will help. Mm. You can relocate after the season, and they will not get relegated. Honestly, they're picking up their points where they need to. Again, I would much rather worry about Hanover, one place under them. I mean, they only have 2 points less, but they look much more horrendous in whatever thing that they do than Kiel does. Like, this league is tied. It will always be tied. You will never be completely safe in midfield in March. That's very clear. But does it help to completely they say we want a new coach now. What is it gonna do? I don't think it's gonna do anything for that team. And we're like, you shouldn't lose that game, obviously. But at the same time, again, what did they expect out of this season? Did they expect a seeding in the top five? They're still in the top 10. I would be very happy if I would be in the top 10. A lot of teams would be happy if they're in the top 10.
Yeah.
But obviously, there will always be teams around you who will make sure that they use your mistakes, that they make it out of the advantage. Look at St. Pauli, look at Karlsruhe. Obviously, they leapfrogged them a bit. But I still don't think Kiel... Obviously, they play Hamburg next, and they play Bielefeld after the international break, and then they play Hansa Rostock. Okay. I'm pretty sure at this stage, wild guess, but we've seen Kiel doing it before, that they will get a point against Hamburg. Because it's Hamburg and it's Kiel. They just fit together like that. Okay. I might be open for chats about how this season went when they lose to Bielefeld and Rostock. Would be open to that. But as of now, they have the international break coming up. They can sort themselves in this 2 weeks, and then they come back, and then they play the... If they get 3 points out of that, 6 points out of that, they're completely fine. And then you might think, okay, is it really necessary to question everything? Because Masenrab has done good. Like, in my opinion, Kiel is still a bit overperforming for example, that one of their most... Like the striker they were looking out for, that the league was looking out for, and Benjamin Pilcher, look at how good they started off the season. Like, he's injured. And as a team like Kiel, it's very difficult to kind of replicate stuff that. And if you had Skripski, who couldn't find back in his form as of now, I mean, he scored now, but you know what I mean. You have to work what you get. You have to work with what you are being left with, and for Kiel, that's okay.
Yeah. Do we have to remind them that they chose willingly Andre Schubert post the Tim Walter era and how long that lasted? Come on. It's all fine. Anyway, we should probably talk about Jan, because early on, Jonas Urbig made some really good saves. He denied Skripski early on. It was a marvelous save. And yeah, big win for them. It was vital as well that they did so, considering what happened around them. Bielefeld had won the day before. Nuremberg had won. Sandhausen had the draw. Like, it was vital for them to get something. Obviously doesn't solve their problems. Tough game at home against Paderborn on the weekend. But it's, you know, they're at 16th now, so they're out of the bottom two. And, you know, who knows? Who knows? But honestly, in a year that's been really difficult for them, in a game where they didn't want it, the ball was lava, they barely touched it. But they, you know, when they had the possession, when they had the ball, they made the most of it, and a vital 3 points for them. Speaking of teams that could desperately use a victory, let's talk about Hanover. They welcomed Hansa Rostock, another team in desperate need of 3 points, to the HDI Arena. We had thought in this game early on that Maximilian Bayer had opened the scoring. A wonderful ball from Max Bishushkov to find Bayer, who hits first time. Marcus Kolker remonstrating immediately to Daniel Zibert that there was a foul in the build-up. I don't know. It may have been a high foot from Sebastian Ernst. That's what it was given for. No goal. Rostock were very good in the first half, though. All told, they created a lot of good chances. They were very dangerous. They were dynamic in the final third. But it didn't. It take something special to break the deadlock. Phil Neumann's header looked like it would have cleared the danger, but Dennis Dressel does something outstanding. Initially gets it chested down, hits it on the volley. It's an uncomfortable-looking volley from Dressel, but the ball dips and hits the crossbar and goes into a stationary Zila in front of the travelling support. I think they brought 7,000 to Hanover. 1-0 at the break, and to be fair, on the balance of play, deserved. But they gave it away in the second half. And the goal came just after the hour mark. Some really terrible defending from Rostock. And the ball eventually found its way to Bushushkov, who won't score an easier goal this season, being it was his first goal this season. Then they thought they had taken the lead when Dominic Kuhn had found Maximilian Bayer once again. Bayer with an excellent finish, but it was offside in the build-up. Except it wasn't offside. That's the problem. It was all legal. It was all onside. And the final score was 1-1. And Hanover were even more infuriated when Daniel Siebert didn't allow them to take the corner at the end of the game, which I'm okay with that. That's fine. The big issue here is that it seems as if the users of the technology failed in this instance, in what wasn't a very good week for video assistance refereeing. In the highlights, we see the line. He looks onside. So, did Hanover deserve to win this game? I don't know. I think the scoreline in the end is probably justified, considering how much Hansa dominated the first half and how much Hanover were able to wrestle it back in the second. But yeah, definitely Hanover fans, and in particular Stefan Lytle, have everything to be upset about with what transpired at the HDI Arena. Not the HDI Arena, that's last season's name. The Heinz von Heiden Arena last season. This week. Far out. Matthew, wake up, Matthew. Eva, take over, please. Please, I'm done.
No, I mean, the thing is, once again, a very close decision, and I thought in the match it was like immediately, this is not offside. And obviously, this is another problem with not being it semi-automatic. Where do we stop the frame? The Sportschau showed a frame a bit earlier where we can't be completely sure whether the ball has already left the feet, but not the foot, sorry, not the feet. But yay! I know my grammar, I know my vocabulary. That's a first. No, but obviously this is like milliseconds decision, and yeah, honest to God, I thought the second one wasn't. And the first one I can go with. The second one, I'm pretty sure it's not offside. But I mean, we still have to talk about that Hanover should never be in that position in the first place, where we have to talk so much about an offside decision. I mean, in the first half, they could have taken the lead two or three times. Due to Mumulu at least twice. What I didn't understand was, as well, the Ernst versus Neidhardt scene, where I have no idea why it is given a free kick for Hansa Rostock. Like, I just do not know. Gonna be honest with you. But, yeah. I don't know. I mean, they in my opinion, they just stop playing after that offside decision, and Verhoek nearly with the 2-1, and after that it's only Rostock for me. So that's something. I mean, they now, like, this is the worst stage to be at before the derby.
Oh yeah.
And I'm gonna tell you, if they lose that derby, I do think Stefan Leitl will be gone. Because the pressure from the fans, from the officials, just in general, will be too high, that as of now, I can't imagine. And I mean, in a way, it sounds weird, but it's fitting, because afterwards, in an international break. Because we do not only speak about not reaching probably like the... I do think at least that the target of the season was to be in like in a very comfortable position to at least talk about promotion. They're in a very comfortable position to talk about relegation as of now. Like, sounds a bit harsh because they're still, I think 8 points out. But like, we've seen how fast something can work in this league, and as of now, like, I don't know who is in the worst shape at the moment, Hanover or Braunschweig. Like, not statistically, but just in what they bring on the pitch. I cannot tell you that, to be honest. And that's not good. Like, for Braunschweig, that is a bit okay. For Hanover, that's not good. And they need to win that game. They need that. Otherwise, I do not want to be a Hanover fan at the moment. I don't want to be a player, and I don't want to be Stefan Leiter.
Oh, yeah. Three draws in their last five league games. Only team in 2023 yet to win in the Zweite Bundesliga. The silence is deafening of a team that is in dire straits. The thing is, they're not doing much wrong. They're just not getting results. And unfortunately, this is a results-based business. You win, let the good times roll. You lose, you kick to the curb. See you next time. So, it'll be fascinating. Really, it'll be fascinating. That derby game is going to be massive. And could really rejig, kickstart Braunschweig's hopes for survival. But it could also, it could very much drag Hanover back into the race. You know, Fürth have been dragged back in. Who knows? You know, Bielefeld could win on the weekend, or Regensburg could make it 2 on the bounce. Sandhausen could win. You know, Rostock could beat Fortuna Düsseldorf.
I swear to God, don't jinx it, Matthew.
I am not jinxing anything. Remember, I said that, hey, maybe Bielefeld will win last week, and then they did. So they will not win this week.
Don't double jinx. This is not how it works.
They won't. No one's winning this week. We're gonna have 9 draws. There you go. Let's move on to our final game. Magdeburg and Paderborn. This game ended goalless. Both keepers were great in this game. Dominik Reimann, Yannick Hut. Paderborn missed the opportunity, of course, to cement themselves as a fourth place team, but also close the gap to the top three. Magdeburg, not a bad result considering they're still 5 points clear of the bottom three. Not much to say about this game, really. Ito had that chance late. Paderborn had a couple of chances throughout the game, but pretty tight game. Neither team really gave a lot, and I think it would be fair to say that the 0-0 was probably in the end, despite the strong early phases from Paderborn. 0-0 seemed like a pretty fair result.
Yeah, especially because in the second half you had Artic all over the place, and Hutu had to save once or twice, and in the end probably the two last chances, or the two last best chances for each team, with Ito and Justvan, were both times precision was missing, especially Ito. Was probably hoping to get like 3 out of 3 perfect games in ways of impact in a game. I think in the end for Paderborn, it was okay for them to not concede here. I mean, they probably wanted to win, but still we're talking about a Paderborn side where, and I mean, I said this the last 2 weeks, where two of their most important players are missing. So for them, I mean, obviously they wanted to win. You just pointed that out. And they probably had the better chances, but in the end, I would say for both goalkeepers that the 0-0 is okay. I'm fine with that.
Yeah, me too. I think so. Doesn't hurt either team. I mean, both would have loved to have had the 3 points, but probably a fair result in the end. I know we've kept that one short, but there really isn't a whole lot to talk about on the pitch in this one. We'll head off to our kick tip. Alex is still leading. Proved that they were human. Only scored 4 this week after just, you know, completely blitzing everyone. 282 is the leader. Marv, 1910, assuming is a St. Pauli fan. 19 points, our top scorer. Congratulations to you. We don't have any podcast recommendations this week, but we have things that we'd like to recommend. Of course, if you love Ted Lasso, can't see why you wouldn't, but if you do, it's out now. Go see. If you haven't watched episode 1, you should probably go do that after you've listened to us, of course. That, yeah, obviously. Very good first episode, by the way. Real tearjerker. So, yeah, go check it out. And I've also got on my own personal website, MatthewCarriage.com, which you should also go and check out. I've got a match day preview coming out on Friday. I am not going to tell you what game it is yet. You'll see it when it comes out. Purely
going to be a surprise.
It is going to be a surprise. I just think if there's anyone listening at the DFL, they may nick my idea, so they can not do that. Or they can just hire me. You know, it's an idea. You know, I'm affordable. But yeah, so that look be on the lookout for that. It'll have team news, quotes from the press conference, and the prediction that I actually put in my kick tip. So, you know, I could easily lie through that, but I'm not going to. So yeah, that is what's happening this week, and we'll be back next week to discuss all the action before the international break. That is everything from Match Day 25. We hope you have a fantastic weekend. We sure will, and we look forward to your company on Wednesday when the Spider Bundesliga returns.